Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking on a topic that is probably responsible for more stalled growth and burned out founders than any single market crash.
Or any competitor, for that matter.
Exactly. And here's the surprising thing our sources all point to. Most companies don't fail dramatically. They don't get blown up by a rival.
No, they fail slowly, almost so you can't see it happening. It's because of a problem that just hides in plain sight.
It's true. When you look across all the material, the thing that stalls growth isn't always some big external shock.
It's almost always overwhelming internal friction. We call it complexity, but, you know, some of the organizational studies we reviewed had a great term for it.
What's that?
Organizational drag.
Organizational drag. Okay, let's unpack that. Because for anyone listening right now, we know you're trying to grow, and growth, well, it always brings some chaos with it. So our mission for this deep dive is to pull out the key insights on how this complexity creeps in, disguised as progress, the specific ways it hurts performance, and this is the most important part, the simple first steps to reverse that trend.
And what's so fascinating is how deceptive the whole problem is. I mean, think back to the start of any business. It's beautifully simple.
Right. You sell a thing. You deliver the thing, you get paid.
Exactly. Yeah. And if a problem comes up, the whole system is so small and transparent. You fix it fast. It's high speed, high leverage.
It's that direct action, minimal bureaucracy phase.
Precisely. But then growth happens. And as the company gets bigger, the material shows this really predictable pattern. Work starts to slow down.
Customers wait longer.
Yep. Customers wait longer. Meetings start multiplying. And you inevitably add new tools, new rules, new checklists.
All with the best intentions, right?
Right.
To stay organized.
To stay organized, yeah. To capture knowledge. And that's the trap. It feels like normal growth, not like you're making a mistake.
But that's the whole issue. Your instinct is to add structure to fight the chaos. But you're saying the antidote adding all these things actually becomes the poison.
That's it. That pile up of extra steps, check-ins, overlapping systems, unnecessary sign-offs. That is what we mean by complexity. And it's one of the biggest reasons businesses stall, lose money, or just run the founder straight into the ground.
Why? Because they're the only one left who gets how the whole mess works.
They're the only one.
That brings us to where this gets really interesting. Because complexity isn't introduced because people are lazy or, you know, malicious. It comes from the best intentions.
Absolutely. It looks like progress, not danger. Nobody wakes up and says, you know what, today I'm going to make our business 10 times harder to run.
No, but they do have a specific problem they're trying to solve.
And they reach for the closest solution, which is always adding something. They say, we lost that file, so we need a new file naming rule and a manager to make sure everyone follows it.
And that perfectly illustrates the cycle we saw in the research. Let's talk about tool creep, for example. You start small. Maybe with Salesforce, because you need to track clients.
Right. That's step one. But then you realize Salesforce is kind of clunky for managing the actual day-to-day project work.
So you add Asana or Jira.
And now you have two critical platforms, and the data doesn't talk to each other. So suddenly, somebody's job is to manually copy updates from Asana back into Salesforce.
That manual syncing?
Mm-hmm.
That's what one source called process debt.
It is. You've just built future friction right into the system. And that failure to communicate leads to the next cycle.
The meeting spiral.
The meeting spiral. You realize half the team checks Asana and the other half checks Salesforce. So you add a weekly alignment meeting.
But that meeting gets bogged down in tiny updates, so things still fall through the cracks. So what's the next step?
You add another meeting. A pre-meeting to set the agenda for the first meeting, or a follow-up sync to talk about what happened.
It sounds exhausting.
And then you try to solve it with documentation. You add 5 new checklist items for every project kickoff, and then you hire someone whose only job is to make sure the checklists are followed.
And pretty soon you have, as the saying goes, more management than momentum.
That's the tipping point.
Yeah.
You reach a place where like 80% of your energy is just managing the process, and only 20% is actually serving the client.
That's a painful realization for a founder.
It's the moment the business becomes top-heavy. You didn't hire people to manage a process. You hired them to deliver value. But the process itself becomes the thing that needs all the managing.
Okay, so if that's how the problem gets in, let's talk about the specific damage it does. You've boiled this down to a triple threat. What's harm number one?
Harm number one, it slows everything down. This is where that organizational drag really shows up. We saw case studies where the time it takes to get a simple yes or no.
The decision latency.
Right. It increased by over 500% in just a few years.
But why? What's the mechanism there?
It's a mix of risk aversion and needing consensus. A simple decision that used to be one person's call now needs three different people to review it.
And two more CC'd on the email chain?
Exactly. So the work itself moves slower because every single stage is a bottleneck waiting for an approver that's stuck in someone's inbox. And when small problems pop up, it's not even clear who owns it anymore.
So no one can fix it quickly.
That clarity of ownership just gets buried under all the layers.
It's death by a thousand microvetoes.
Okay.
What's the second harm?
Harm number two. It creates more mistakes. And this is counterintuitive, right? You'd think more process means more precision.
But it doesn't.
It creates inconsistency. Details just get lost when work is handed off between too many people. It's like that game of telephone you played as a kid.
So quality starts to slip.
Totally. Quality becomes inconsistent when there are like five different versions of how we do it floating around. And the tool problem we talked about, that's a huge mistake generator.
When the systems don't match up.
Yeah, people start doing work twice, you get conflicting data, and you end up with errors that just frustrate everyone, your team, and your clients.
That is the definition of friction.
Yeah.
Wasted energy, worse results.
Yeah.
But I think this last one is the most personal for the founder.
Harm number three. It makes the founder the bottleneck. This is the state that just doesn't scale. When the system gets this confusing or when ownership is unclear.
Every decision ends up back on their desk.
Every single one, even the minor ones.
I can just hear founders nodding along to this. They become the company's memory, the person who has to translate everything.
That's it, exactly. The founder spends all day translating the confusing system for everyone else. They become the glue holding everything together.
Which sounds good, but it's not.
It's not. And the research is so clear here. When the founder's calendar is 80% internal meetings and only 20% strategy or sales, the business cannot grow. The entire company is capped at the founder's personal capacity. It's a structural ceiling.
That image of being the glue is really powerful. So we know the damage. Now, how do we spot it? You mentioned the material highlights three specific places complexity shows up in service businesses.
Yeah, these are like diagnostic tools. We're giving you the X-ray vision to see the root causes, not just the symptoms.
Okay, first up is type one, process complexity.
This is when the way you do the work just has too many steps, too many approvals, or, and this is a big one, too many special cases.
Right, where the exception becomes the rule.
Exactly. You get that one-off client and you build a whole new mini process just for them. The result is the process just keeps growing, but the actual result, speed, quality, client happiness, they don't get any better. It's
yeah.
All overhead with diminishing returns.
It sounds like the process is trying to eliminate all risk, but what it really eliminates is all speed. So what about the people side of things? Type two, team complexity.
This is all about unclear roles, and it shows up in two really destructive ways. The first is what you'd call a responsibility gap.
Where two people think the other person owns a task.
So nobody owns it. It's the classic dropped ball between sales and delivery. It just sits there.
And the second way is the opposite problem, but maybe even more costly.
That's the handoff disaster. This is when you have five different people all touching the same simple task. Nobody feels empowered to make a final call, so they just pass it along.
So it dramatically increases the time to get anything done.
It kills it. The efficiency dies right there from all the handoffs and context switching.
And finally, a very modern problem. Type three, tool complexity.
This is just having too many overlapping or poorly integrated systems. You know, look at your tech stack. Are you using four different tools when one could do the job?
Or are the integrations always broken?
Always broken, requiring someone to fix it manually. This is where you see what they call shadow IT.
Which is when employees just start using their own tools because the official ones are too slow or confusing.
That's it. And the biggest red flag for tool complexity, the most powerful signal, it's when your team starts keeping their own spreadsheets on their desktop.
Because they don't trust the main system.
They don't trust it, or they can't understand it. That personal spreadsheet is a five-alarm fire. It's a sign that your official complex process is basically unusable.
And that brings us right back to the central idea. Businesses don't fail because people stop trying.
No, they fail because the operation becomes too complicated to run, no matter how hard everyone works.
So if your business is already feeling that weight, how do you even start to fix it? I mean, without kicking off some massive, expensive overhaul project.
Because that's just more complexity, right? A complex project to fix all the way through to getting paid and hopefully the renewal. And for each step, you document three simple things. Who owns it? what tool is used, and how many people have to sign off on it.
Okay, so once you have that map laid out, what are the red flags? What are you looking for?
You're hunting for the friction points. You have to ask the hard questions. Where does work always slow down? Where does it get stuck waiting for an answer for more than, say, 48 hours?
And where do people ask, who owns this?
That's a huge one, and maybe the biggest. Where do you keep adding more steps, a new checklist, another meeting, to fix the same problem that just keeps coming back?
That cycle of treating the symptom instead of the disease, that's the engine of complexity right there.
It is. And once you have that visibility, you can use the core rule that protects your business. Remove before you add.
It's a counter-discipline.
It is an essential discipline.
I like that. But how do you know what to remove? What if you're afraid of cutting something important?
The material offers a really great way to judge this. Ask yourself, does this step or this rule add 20% friction to the process, but only a 1% improvement to the final outcome?
If that ratio is all friction and no real value, you cut it.
You have to be ruthless. Cut the steps that protect you from some imaginary future problem at the cost of your current speed.
So if you want to add a new step, remove an old one. If you want a new tool, you have to get rid of an old one first.
It forces an efficiency audit on the spot. If you want out a meeting, you have to cancel a different, lower value meeting. That simple constraint is what protects the business from that slow, well-meaning creep of complexity. Subtraction isn't just cleaning up. It's a proactive growth strategy.
That's such a powerful way to think about it. Instead of growth always meaning more, real sustainable growth could mean simpler and faster.
Exactly.
We've talked about complexity as this sort of necessary danger of growth, but subtraction is the active countermeasure. It lets you scale without burning out the engine. You get your momentum back.
And if you're feeling that weight right now, just remember, the goal isn't to be perfect overnight. The goal is just to get immediate visibility. Don't try to rebuild the whole thing at once.
Give us that final provocative thought, the specific homework for the listener this week.
Okay. Take a moment this week and think about your business. And based on what we've talked about, ask yourself two very specific questions. First, where does work slow down first? Is it in sales? Is it in the actual delivery? Okay. Or is it in getting paid? Pinpoint that number one point of friction.
Find the biggest bottleneck, not just the easiest one to fix.
And second, where are you, the founder, still the person everyone depends on because ownership isn't clear? Finding where you are the glue is the fastest, clearest indicator of where your system is broken. And that spot, that is where you can start applying the rule. Remove before you add. That's where simplifying will give you the biggest return.